Welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children. And by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education today.
Welcome, I'm Dr. Richard Tooley, and I have with me here Mark Smeby. Is it that way, or did I get it wrong?
That's Smeby, actually. It's Smeby. A long name. Yeah. And what do I call you, Richard or Dr. Tooley?
You can call me Richard.
Richard, that's easier.
So, let's start off with this thing.
You
have a couple of things here. You got a CD here called The Messenger, A Journey into Hope. Now, this is a music CD, right?
Absolutely.
You have a book, too, here.
Yeah.
It's got the same title. That's
Isn't
interesting.
That
two of them going together here.
Absolutely. You know how movies have soundtracks?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is exactly what I wanted to do. It started as a book, and then I'm like, you know what? I got to do a soundtrack for this book. I'm a musician, and I live here in Nashville, and so I sing and travel, do concerts around the country. And so it was just a natural fit to attach the CD project to the book project as well. So, and they're both coming out. March 1st is the date. So they're both releasing the same day all over the country.
So is this a vocal? Has it got vocal?
It's just like you're listening to an artist CD, like, you know, Michael Lovie Smith or Chris Tomlin or something like that. But it's songs that are all inspired by the story of The Messenger. Talk about a creative project.
Yeah.
That's quite an assignment.
So probably a good thing. So somebody who wants to read the book could read this book and then in the car when they're traveling, thinking about it, they use the CD.
Absolutely.
To kind of help them reflect on the process.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you how I managed to do that, not only just the creative process, but I kept the theme of hope prominent throughout the whole project, whether it was the book, the CD, or my life in general. That's what my focus is on, is hope. That's why the book is subtitled The Journey into Hope, because it's about one person's journey discovering what the true meaning of hope is in spite of circumstances. So that's what I write my songs about. So it's just a natural fit together. So if somebody wants to explore that concept of hope, man, I would love to be that guide on that journey.
We're going to go there. But I'm going to go there after I get through. Ask questions. Who's the messenger?
Who is the messenger?
Yeah.
Like what character in the book?
Yeah, because you put the title, The Messenger.
The Messenger.
Messenger.
Well, it's meant to be a little mysterious. Can I tell you the premise of the book?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a fable. All right. It's set in a Norwegian mountain village.
So like an allegory.
Absolutely. It's an allegorical novella. That's the official phrase.
Oh, I like that.
Yes. It's a mouthful. But in this Norwegian mountain village where people just wear ruts in their road to and from their job or school every day, they barely look up at each other. There's a man, Thomas, who says there's got to be something more to life than this, than just the day-to-day grind. I don't know if you know that feeling, but I sure do. And at the end of the village stands a mountain that is basically a monument to risk-taking. There's rumors that people have climbed it and have never come back. So it's just this monument of fear and risk-taking. And so Thomas gets a message that he needs to climb the mountain. So he climbs the mountain, and on the side of the mountain, he meets a woman, an old woman that's been waiting for someone from the village to come up so that she can begin mentoring him on how to awaken the slumbering souls in the village down below. So you might say, she's the messenger. But then you might say, then Thomas becomes the messenger. The answer is we are all the messenger if we choose to accept that. That's the calling that we have on ourselves from God.
How did you journey to the point where you said, well, I think I'm going to write me a book. I don't think that's quite the way it went. I feel a creative moment coming on and I need to write. Usually you don't follow that. There's something that's compelling you to want to take on writing something, because, you know, writing a book, I tell you from
experience yes,
that you're looking at something that's not going to just whoosh, there it is.
You're
going to just put that old paper in the printer there and the sheets just come automatically out there and they're just exactly
it's filled with wonder and majesty.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, it's like there are those days when you say, why did I do this? And you want to stop, but then you're compelled to go on. So what was the journey and to bring you to this idea of talking about this hope?
Well, we could sit here for hours, I'm sure, Richard, and talk about this. But when I think about what would be the practical way to talk about it, I wrote this initial manuscript 15 years ago. I was inspired to write this story because I am on a journey of waking up, and waking up to the true meaning of the gospel, what that really, really means for me. To communicate that in a creative, authentic, excellent way that maybe has been done in a similar way, but maybe not exactly this way. I felt like that was my assignment. And so I wrote the initial manuscript, and it sat around for years. And I have a feeling somebody else is listening to this right now with that same thing. They maybe even had a good idea they started, or they finished it, and it's still sitting in the corner. God knows those things that we've kept in our heart and in the back of our mind and in that the closet. You know, he knows those things. And I never gave up. I never gave up believing that something could happen with this manuscript. And so I talked to different people through the years, different literary agents, if you will. Some were interested and just didn't have any luck, whatever the case may be. But finally, about a year and a half ago, a friend of mine, who is now a literary agent, said, I'll try to sell your book. And so, it's a long story short, we got 25 rejections, and the 26th person said yes. That set me on a whole nother creative process, because they took my initial manuscript and said, we believe it can be better. But you know what? To have somebody believe in me like that, I said, I will serve you however you desire. I will rewrite however you desire, and trusting their knowledge about the industry. And so we worked on this for 6 months, really shaping the manuscript to make it a better book. And in retrospect, it's like 4,000 times better. So let me pull out a practical lesson from that. Just when you think you're done with a creative project, that might just be the starting point. I've had that happen in other times where maybe I'll write a song that I think is so amazing, because I wrote it, of course. You know, I think this is so amazing, then somebody else comes along and says, well, it's okay, why don't we tweak this here, put this bridge in here, change the chorus, up a key here at the end, and then all of a sudden you're like, where did that song come from? I have to hold very loosely onto my creative ideas. I can't be married to them. I can't be prideful or arrogant and think that I've got it all figured out.
But there is one thing, too, in looking back. Most of the time when you look back, you know, you can see more clearly what God did for you on the way.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm convinced of that God's been holding me this whole time, holding me. And he's been cheering for me, saying, don't give up. So if anybody's listening right now and they feel all alone, and whatever it is they're working on, let me tell you that God is saying a gigantic yes over you. And whatever it is that he's placed on your heart to bring to life, God is cheering for you. He is screaming a giant yes over you. So don't give up.
Let's back up a little
sure.
bit now.
Yeah.
And go back to you are in the creative industry. Is this the first book in the creative industry?
This is the first book of mine to get widespread potential platform.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, I don't know how better to put that. You know, to get widespread distribution,
yeah.
You know, PR, marketing, that whole kind of thing. So have I written other books? Yes. Some for other people as ghostwriters. I have another one that I've written that we hope to have something happen with it as well. So, yeah, I'm kind of a writer guy.
So you're a writer guy. Is this your first musical foray?
This is my fifth CD.
Ah.
So I've been making music and traveling and doing concerts and singing and sharing stories of hope for about the last 6 years.
And that's your primary, what you've been in. So what drew you to music to start with?
Oh, my goodness. Music is the thing that has been my biggest source of encouragement. You know, like, I don't know about you, but I'm guessing that you probably spent some time, maybe as a teenager, in your bedroom listening to LPs, right? Or 45s, maybe.
Yeah. Or cassettes. Or
yes.
A-tracks.
And then A-tracks. Yes.
Yeah.
And you know what? There's every once in a while, a certain song would come on that would say to me, you're not alone, or you're not weird for feeling this way, or you can look at God this way, and you're not weird. Like when Christian music came along, and it kind of became cool, and it showed me that I could live that way as well, so that was monumental for me, and gave me great hope. And so to have an opportunity to be that hope for somebody else, to me, seems to be one of the greatest honors. And so that means you got to write some songs and make them good so people can like them.
So you've got this passion for music. It's interesting because there's two tracks. I mean, you could have gone down secular track and been out there with the secular world.
Right.
Or you could be in the Christian track. Now, as you have just alluded to, the Christian track early on was, like, the space was very small
right.
in it. And ironically, too, the forms of music that showed up in the Christian track tended to be gospel and not too many other genres. You know, then some of the rock came in.
Yeah.
And so you approach music and you say, I'm going to go the Christian track with it. I'm going to go into religious music. I'm going to go into praise God music. Why?
Boy, this these are the kind of questions that I have with friends, because some of the question you just posed could be a marketing question. Who are you going to market your music to? And there's certain ways to do that that are easier than others, right? If we're saying, what is the purpose behind what I do? That could be a whole nother question.
Yeah.
The purpose behind what I do is to bring life to people. And I believe that that life is found in waking up to the unbelievable, unconditional, unfathomable love of our Creator God, as demonstrated best in Jesus Christ. That's what I'm all about. Now, let me go back to how I believe I need to do that: with excellence, authenticity, and creativity. So I want to craft my message in a way that people hear it and are able to receive it on the terms where they're at. So sometimes you can use certain words and you appeal to a certain audience, right? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
And there's some words that you can use, you appeal to another audience, all right? So as I've sought to be most authentic and compelling with what I do, seeking to point people to the unbelievable love of God, I find that there's a way to do that that allows people that wherever they're at on the spiritual journey to step into it and grab a hold of it and move that much closer to God. Now, I don't know what we call that. I would be glad to have it be called, you know, God-honoring music, life-giving music, inspirational music.
Musicians work hard at their craft. I know, I've been there. I'm not on any circuit right now. My genre was a different type of genre, but I've done enough.
Yeah.
So when you get into music, especially in churches nowadays, you walk into church, oh, can you have special music for us today?
And right.
Like, man, you think that we're going to just flip off special music for you today, and nobody did any work on it, and nobody learned anything, nobody worked it up.
Right.
You know, this is something that at one level is taken so for granted.
Right.
But there's hours of work.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's hours of preparation.
Absolutely.
That went into it. There are dues that you paid.
Yes.
To get to the point where you were proficient enough to take your music out. Music is a craft, and moving into it and the effort that it takes, because there is an effort.
Absolutely.
I mean, granted, good musicians come into it with a certain level of built-in talent.
Some do, yes.
You got to have a base on which
right.
You build.
And I think what I hear you saying is that it's easy to think that inspiration is enough.
Yeah.
And it's not. To have any sort of excellence, to have any sort of audience that you build, it's frustrating, because we go to concerts or we turn on the radio and we hear stuff at its finished state, right?
Yeah.
And it sounds amazing, and you hear the inspiration, and then you feel inspiration, and then you think you can do that. But you're not aware of all the behind-the-scenes working, you know?
Yes.
You know, and so that's a huge, huge element that I'd love to encourage people with. Because, you know, I hear people, even grown-ups, they say, oh, man, I'd love to be a singer, but I just can't. I'm like, you know what? You know, give me an hour, and I'm going to show you how you can be a singer. Don't hide behind what you think you can or cannot do that you haven't put the work into. You know, if you say, I can't play the piano, well, you haven't practiced for 1,000 hours. Right? Then you can tell me whether you can play the piano or not. But until you've done that, don't say you can't play the piano or not.
You know, you go through these different levels, because there's levels of proficiency that you need to grow to.
Absolutely.
And so you get somebody who can put up some good sheet music and play it, and then you get some people up there who can sit down at a piano, but they've done something that got them to that point.
Hours and hours and hours of work.
Yeah.
Probably, you know, 10, 20,000 hours of work on that specific instrument. Yeah.
And so you've put in as much effort as anybody in any other career would have. And in some ways, you're in a career that contains a whole lot of risk, because all of those hours that you're putting in there are usually thankless hours.
Hmm.
There's nobody's paying you to sit down there and learn your instrument and learn your craft. You're honing that craft with a vision of something that's further down the road.
Kind of like the people that built cathedrals, right?
Yeah.
I mean, generations, right?
Yeah.
It's like, hey, yeah, I'm building this cathedral, but so did my dad and my grandfather, and they're both, you know, gone.
Yeah, they're dead, but they had a vision.
Absolutely. It's the same thing. I wonder if we're losing that in our culture today. The ability to believe in a vision, to believe in something that God puts in our heart. I believe God made all of us incredibly unique and put things in us that He wants us to do for a specific purpose. I love that, and I'm going to shout it from the rooftops. But we get so distracted because we get our purposes handed to us by the media. You know, we get, here, be inspired by this thing that we see on TV or hear about or whatever it is. And so we don't have a chance to learn how to really nurture what's in our heart. So, man, I'm a huge, huge fan of encouraging people to pull away from all the external voices and spend time really trying to seek what's in your heart. You know what the big indicator of what that might be is? I know this might sound weird. Joy. I believe that joy is a great indicator, a purpose that God puts in our heart that he wants us to bring out. Because God doesn't want us to be miserable, right?
You talk about this hope. So it comes back to hope. Now, because we have different interpretations and different
Absolutely.
Meanings of hope.
Absolutely.
But, you know, you sit there honing your craft thanklessly for hours. And it keeps you from doing things that you might want to do. But you know that if you did the things that you wanted to do, you wouldn't be doing the things that would get you to where you wanted to go.
Wow. You make it sound like an athlete training for the Olympics.
You know it is.
Yes.
I have a daughter, 17 years old now. She plays with a touring symphony orchestra.
Oh, terrific.
Still. She's a flutist.
Ah, terrific.
So she's playing with us. They just did a tour to Australia.
Oh, wow.
And they were down in Texas. So she's a high school student,
wow.
And she's playing with this. It's a college orchestra.
Great.
That tours. You know, I tell her, and she's an athlete also.
Oh.
She's captain of her basketball team.
Oh, my gosh.
Volleyball,
she keeps you busy.
Soccer. And I tell her, there's no difference between your athletic training and your music training. They both require the same type of mental toughness and discipline that says, you know, I'm going to close that door. I'm not going to go out and do those things that I might want to do. But I'm going to close that door, and I'm going to spend my time here.
That's beautiful. Can I add something to that? Because I love that idea of discipline, and practice is so important. And I don't do enough, so you're kind of hitting a nerve for me. But let me add to that, that as artists, in whatever form it is, as artists, we need to be living life. Great artists are usually very familiar with pain and joy and experiences that this life has to offer, so that then we can draw from that. My fear is that sometimes it's easy to get really focused on one thing and you just do that.
Yes.
And if you're doing that to stay focused on, say, running the 100-meter dash, and you get really good at that, that's great and that's awesome. But like I am, if I'm trying to kind of create a well that I can draw from to bring inspiration and help to other people, I have to be living life. I have to be reading. I have to be having conversations continually, listening to interesting music, interesting teachers, that whole thing. I need to really be, that's my practicing, you know? It's like soaking in it so that when I go into that well, when I try to draw from that, something comes out of it that's just not empty.
Yeah. Well,
so
see, you
that's
bring
my
up
responsibility.
A very important point.
Thank you.
And I think it's important for everyone, but especially for the artists. If you have not tuned yourself into the wonderment of life. If you don't have that wonderment, if you lose that wonderment, you lose your capacity to communicate at that level.
Richard, I love that. And you just gave me a great analogy. But you use the word tune. And I thought about your daughter, how before she sits down to play with the symphony, she has to tune her flute, right?
Uh-huh.
And if she doesn't,
it's bad.
It's really bad. And you really hope that the people around you tune as well. Our lives are the same way. We have to, I'll speak for myself, I have to stay in tune. And for me, that means being rooted solely in the truth of the gospel. Being rooted, that keeps me tuned. That keeps me tuned in so that I'm getting the right signal from the broadcaster, you know what I'm saying? And so I'm in tune so then I can go out into the world and I'm not singing off pitch. Staying tuned. So important.
So as we talk about all these things, we're talking about, again, in terms of this, a journey into hope. We talk about this hope that says the future is what's I'm hoping for. But there's another aspect of hope, and I don't know if that's the one you're coming from here, but I'm going to throw it out there. And the analogy I'd use is if you were down in a well, and there was no way for you to get out of that well. You're sitting waist deep in this ice cold water, and it's like 275 feet up to the top of this well, and all you've seen is this little round hole. You're pretty much in a hopeless situation.
It could feel that way, yes.
Yeah, there would be. You would know that you can't climb those slimy walls. You're going to die in that hole until someone drops a rope down to you. Now you have a different type of hope. Because when you got that rope, life became a reality again for you. And that's a kind of hope that I think Jesus gives us. But it's the hope that comes from being hopeless.
Absolutely. So I might even, if you don't mind me, I'm going to see you and raise you, that I think true hope actually is only possible when you're in that bottom of the well and there is no rope.
Yeah.
That's because that's when you know hopelessness. Because you feel like I can choose hope, I can choose hopelessness, but it's going to affect whether I survive or not. It's these hopeless situations that I hear these stories of that seem unbelievably profound. Like, how did you survive that horrible situation that you were in? There's a hope that you hang on to, even when you can't see any good in sight. You hang on to it. And for me, I believe that hope is based on the fact that God is in this, in the midst of this, whatever it is, whatever disease you have, whatever well you're in the bottom of, whatever is broken or frustrated, that God is in the middle of that, that the story is not finished being written. The end is not here. Because you're breathing, God is in this, and he's still writing a story. And that story might have you in the well for 25 years. It might have you in the well. I mean, I could sit here and tell you stories of people that I'm sure you've heard them too. People that were in these situations for extended period of time. And then God did something. That hope has to be real in those times of desperation, or hope is nothing at all. And so that's what I wanted to write this book, where the journey of not only this man, Thomas, is coming to life, but also his daughter is dying. She is sick with polio, and he believes that she's the one that tells him to climb the mountain, and that he thinks that's how she's going to get better. He's going to find the solution on the side of the mountain. So does hope show up when you get the solution and your daughter's healed, or does hope show up when you understand how God is in this and how loved you are by him, regardless of what happens to your daughter? These are really intense, difficult questions and topics to talk about.
Yes,
so I appreciate it. But I know that there are people out there that are struggling right now, that are listening to different things, and they're praying for a breakthrough. They're praying for a healing of some sort of resolution. And my hope for them right now is to say that God is with you. Emmanuel, God is with us. It's the story of Christ.
Yes.
God came down to be with us so that we would know that we're never alone. That's hope.
Sometimes those become petty words when people don't get it, but if they grab hold of those words and they center Christ in their life, those of us who've been close to that know.
Right, absolutely.
From that.
I do a thing in my concerts where I have a song that's actually on this new CD, The Messenger. The song is called You'll Get Through This. And at the end of the song, I say, how many of you have actually been through something that God has brought you through? You know, and would you just raise your hand? Like, and so like most people raise their hand, all right? But I do that as a way to encourage those that are in something currently that feel like God might not bring them through it. We need each other desperately to say, you know what? I don't know when or how God is going to show up, but I'm going to be with you. I'm not going to go anywhere, but I'm going to be with you through this. That is the best way to live hope that I know.
Yes. Well, now, these books and this CD and your other CD, we have here The Messenger, A Journey into Hope, and accompanying CD or a CD that they can get that is of the same title.
Absolutely.
Where can they get these?
Oh, thank you for asking. That's so nice. Well, of course, my website is the very best place, marksmeby.com, and that's S-M-E-B as in boy, Y. You know how the kids text all the time? If you wanted to text 5490 and text the word brave to 5490, I'll shoot you a free download of my favorite song from the new CD called Brave, which is awesome. And then you'll get some more information about the book and the CD and that whole thing. It's also on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, ChristianBook.com, any bookstore. Not that they'll have it necessarily, but they can order it, okay? So it's everywhere. Wherever you would get a book or buy a CD, iTunes, or whatever it is.
Well, if I were them, I'd be texting that Brave about now.
I know, right? What was that number again? Was that 54900, Richard? I think it was.
Yeah, I think it was right around there.
Text Brave to 54900. And I can't wait for you to hear that song, Brave. It inspires me. I'm so grateful to just be a little part of it. It's weird. It's my song, but I wrote it with my buddy John, and I'm so proud of it.
Well, thank you so much.
Oh my gosh, I'm so grateful for this time and your kindness and your really great thought-provoking questions. Really wonderful being with you.
I have one thing left to say. Keep learning.
You have been listening to Education Current, a production of MRG Media Ministries. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word. mrgmediaministries.com.